You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. Two hat tricks in four games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modgepodge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modgepodge. Whole Modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Kansas City, Missouri, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius, XMFC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe, hanging out with Matt Doyle and David Goss, switching it up. Oh, we've got a live audience. Yes, yes, we do. It's been quite the night. It is.
All of those people are going to be asleep in 12
yes,
minutes.
Yes, it is. It's very late. It is extremely late. We have experienced one of those things that you have to experience if you're a soccer fan in North America, a cup final, a U.S. Open Cup final. Sporting Kansas City, 2-1 victors against the New York Red Bulls on Wednesday night at Children's Mercy Park. We will basically use the last little bits of our voices to...
Well, we have, you know, the best medicine in the world to make sure that our voices get through.
Brown
this.
Water.
Yes, exactly.
Just very, you know, this little is, dirty
this
water.
This is a show for people who like brown liquor.
That's a fact.
You made a good point. Maybe it was during the show, probably after. You save your best stuff for
by
after.
The way, Extra Time Live, driven by Continental, we were there. Dave was like, he was getting sprayed with champagne. He was there for Peter Vermes' epic speech.
Uh-huh.
We had fun as well.
Earmuffs for
yeah,
that speech.
Earmuffs. So go watch that. Go like the Facebook page.
But you made the point that MLS Cup and U.S. Open Cup feel different. Like when you're in the stadium and you're seeing the way teams, and I don't think teams celebrate any less intensely for U.S. Open Cup than they do for MLS Cup, but there's like a freedom, you know, and you see the way the games are played out. There's like a freedom in U.S. Open Cup that you almost never see in MLS Cup, and I honestly think it's because like U.S. Open Cup is still for us. It's still for the hardcore freaking soccer nerds who are up at midnight on a, you know, Wednesday night when they should probably be asleep.
Yep.
And are posting angry screeds on message boards or, you know, SB Nation comment sections or Twitter and making fun of Weeby's rolled up, you know, jeans.
Yeah, they
and
did that. Mm-hmm.
That's your look. That's your brand.
It is.
So the guy who wears the preacher shirt to every single show.
Oh, this is just a linen shirt, my man. My whole move right now is like, yes, I would like another daiquiri. That's what I'm trying to go for as I ease into my 40s.
Did you just say my whole oof?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. Look, here's the thing. The thing about the Open Cup that's a little different is that you don't waltz into the sunset. Mm. Like, the MLS Cup victory, you're just like, we don't have to do jack for 2 months.
We are
like it's party
definitely
time.
Gonna celebrate more than is appropriate.
Correct. There's a parade waiting for us. There's an adoring you know, if you're not at your home like the Sounders last year, there's an adoring throng that will meet you at the airport. But ultimately it is about the same thing, which is legacy making.
Yeah.
And having a moment not just for yourself, but for your city, for your club, for your fan base. That's forever and is a moment of just pure triumph and joy and success and overcoming what are long odds. There's many, many teams in and of this tournament.
Yeah, I think there was 97 this year, which
all
is a modern record.
Yeah. All but one are disappointed.
It's also such a tournament where it's like very rarely do you walk out of U.S. Open Cup and you're like, that's definitely the best team on this,
right?
Not continent, but in this country.
Part of it's the draw, right? Sporting Kansas City have won 3. One was away from home. 2 were at home.
As soon as we saw the draw.
FC Dallas, San Jose, at home, and then into the final against the Red Bulls. So they're tough matchups, but you're at home. Sporting Kansas City now have 24-game unbeaten streak at home.
Who was the last team to win it on the road?
Oh,
was it DC in 2013?
I hope so. 2014.
2013.
I hope that was. And Seattle won it just previously at DC.
Right.
Philly fans.
Seattle
Philly
won
fans
it
are
in
out
2014,
here.
Right? 2015 was Kansas City at
in Philly.
In Philly.
Okay, so that was it.
Yeah, Union fans were so, so sorry. Latif Blessing with a goal in the first half. He was almost unplayable until he got injured, had to be taken off. And then in the second half, Daniel Shalloway, who had come on as well, he scores a goal, pokes it past Ryan Mira, who Jesse Marsh
went
over Luis Robles, which we'll talk about in just a little bit, whether that was the right decision. Bradley Phillips got one late. Felipe had a free kick in a good area that the whole stadium was on pins and needles for. It went over the bar, was not.
Roy Millard it.
Yeah, it was not. What's, ooh.
That was hard.
I know.
That's
it took me a second. It took me a second to really grasp that reference. We were on the field. One of the best moments, I thought, for us, other than the painting of the wall, which I think is a really cool tradition.
For sure.
And I'm with Doyle in some ways of saying, like, you know, for the rest of the year, leave it up as the spray paint. Like, I understand that at some point you want to – it has to have a polish, and you want it to be uniform. But, like, for the rest of the year, just be like, yes, we literally
painted that.
For, like,
12 months, yeah.
Right. Was watching the fans with the trophy, because they passed the trophy into the stands, and then it went all around in the cauldron, and just people's faces as they got the opportunity to lift it and kiss it and do whatever else, that filthy trophy at this point, was really special. But, Dave, you were – in a vantage point that not many people in their lives ever get to be in. You were
next
in the locker room.
Next to Jimmy Conrad.
Yeah.
Oh,
right. Yeah.
In the locker room. Sorry.
No, I was living in Jimmy Conrad's shadow, and that's the world that I would dream to live in, center back partnership with Jimmy Conrad. Yeah, it was pretty special. It's pretty cool. It's one of those things. You walk in, first of all, and like everyone else that was next to me was like, have you ever done this before? And I was like, no. And they're like, okay, just the goggles are necessary, so just keep your eyes closed if you can. And they had to wait for Peter Vermes for a little while because he was doing interviews, and he had the cup on the field. And, like, ownership starts to come in, and the players come in, and there's cases and cases of champagne, and then all of a sudden everything just explodes. Can't really see anything for a little while, and then it calms down, and then Graham Zusi gets up on the table in the middle of everything and just starts spraying everyone from the middle of the table. And him and Roger controlled the party situation. Benny Failhaber I think went for a jacuzzi party pretty quickly right after it, but it was a good time.
Well, they're veterans. They've done this a few times. Like,
so that was
Roger, Zusi, Beisler.
Sinovic,
Failhaber.
So that was my question.
Four?
Yeah. Failhaber only has three because he wasn't there in 2012.
Right.
And Roger wasn't there in 2015 because he was in Wigan. So that was my question, though.
But he has four because he got one in
the FA Cup trophy. Yeah. Was for all of them, was what is this core? What is this legacy? Because four trophies is not anything to laugh about. And to do it now spaced out amongst 5 years isn't
6 years. Well,
let me give you some numbers.
12 to 17 is 6 years.
In terms of total major trophies, which is Shield, MLS Cup, US Open Cup, Champions Cup, Intercontinental Cup, which it's Ziggy and Bruce with 11 and 10.
Which is just mind-boggling, by the way. When I saw that stat tonight, I was like, oh, yeah, because I posed this question. It was like, where does this kind of run for them? Where does this era stand among other eras? And we kind of went through it. And then you see those numbers, and you're like, good.
Yeah.
Lord.
They won some stuff.
Oh,
Ziggy
geez.
And Bruce with 11 and 10. Now it's Peter Vermes next at four. You know, and now if you look all time, the number of cups and trophies teams have won, Kansas City is, I think, fourth. They've got seven, right? They got two MLS Cup, four US Open Cup, and a Shield. That only LA and DC, maybe Chicago, but like they're right up there. And it's this group that did it. It's Seth Sinovic, it's Matt Beisler, Graham Zusi, you know, Benny Failhaber, Roger Espinoza, and now Ico Parra has been there for a couple as well, and Tamelia's got one now. Like, it's
I think
this
Amelia might have two.
Right. So it's this group, that, and let's shout out Dom Dwyer, obviously. He wasn't there, but
well,
he was
I was just going to say a rotating cast of attacking players.
Yeah, yeah.
Dom was there. But
besides Benny.
Sure, but I'm saying, like, up top forwards-wise, Peter Vermes is – he sells when the selling is good. He's not – he doesn't hold
the
on
weirdest,
to
the weirdest thing about this is it's a rotating cast of defensive midfielders as well. They've won with like three or four different
Julio Cesar, Uri Rossell, Ilie,
Suni Mustavar.
Yeah, Lawrence Olam played 75 minutes in an MLS Cup. Like,
no, more than that because it went to PKs.
Yeah, right. And usually when you get a generationally dominant team like this, like compare it to the Sounders for the last 7-8 years.
Or the RSL.
Who only won one, remember. Like,
yeah, that's something we talked about on the last show that blows your mind.
Like, it's almost always been built around a defensive midfielder. The fact that they've gone from one guy to another, to another, to another, and kept winning, I don't know. I need to, like, think about it and, like, study some of the whole tapes a little bit more, but, like, I do think it says something about the rest of the guys. They've done some amazing stuff here.
I think you can also look to those defensive midfielders and see some of the tactical shift. Mm-hmm. What that guy's strengths were really in some ways dictated the way the team played. Julio Cesar was basically a third center back, like to drop in. Uri Rossell was the metronome. He is going to dictate play, but he's not going to be a line breaker. He's just going to hold on to the ball and give an opportunity to other guys. But I think Roger Espinoza through this sort of era is a player that in so many ways personifies what Peter Vermees wants
his
team to be.
Best player on the field tonight.
Yeah, just – and look, you know, there were a number of times when they tried to pressure Roger and he'll get a hip into you and then he'll find the switch.
Yep.
And it wasn't about possession for Kansas City. We know they can possess the ball. This year they've turned into a possession team. They gave the Red Bulls the ball in this game. If you look at the possession stats, there's like no period in which Kansas City actually was on the right side of that. Yeah. They were just more cutting. They chose their moments better. And you could do that to this Red Bulls team because, let's be honest, they're not that threatening. What scares you outside of BWP in question?
Like Kamari Lawrence.
In this game, Kamari Lawrence is dragging himself around the field.
Well, no, he got hurt later on, but
sure,
when he was healthy in the first
but
half.
But he was so narrow.
Everything good comes
Taylor
out of him.
Taylor Twellman reported on Twitter that he wasn't hurt. He was just out of gas.
Oh, okay. Well, then there – but, like, the first half, he was a threat, and every time
was he?
Yeah. The best three or four looks of the first half
came through Tyler Adams.
Okay, maybe, but they were shifted over to the left side, or they came through Tyler Adams connecting with Kamari Lawrence. So, yeah. Huh. Although Tyler Adams' ball from the right side was gorgeous.
Yeah, it was. BWP, 9 times out of 10, takes that first time. The 10th time came in a final.
Not in the biggest game.
We've talked a lot about KC. The celebrations were awesome, epic, great. It was a blast. Our job, Doyle and I, sat there and tried to maybe get an interview with the Red Bulls after this for Extra Time Live.
So awkward.
It was pretty immediately clear that that was not going to happen.
But nothing but respect for people like right. Katie Witham and Julie Stewart Binks and so many great sideline reporters around the league who are able to go out and do that and get useful stuff from these players in these situations when they're catatonic. And we saw that.
Forget useful stuff. Like, that's all league level performance. Just getting them to talk to you is a starting point. And
these guys were destroyed.
Sasha Kljestan was, he had tears in his eyes, no doubt. Bradley Wright Phillips in the same place. Tyler Adams parked on the field in a number of different spots, basically just sitting down wherever it was the team migrated to. Jesse Marsh was pacing. You could tell how frustrated and upset he was.
They stayed out there and watched KC lift the cup. You don't have to do that.
Yeah, I mean, They clapped their fans for a good long while, and then they had to wait to get, I think, called
medals.
Up for the runners-up medals.
Yeah.
But
there
are teams that leave, and I wonder if Jesse said we're staying. It's for them to watch
Jesse
that.
Jesse respects the cup too much to say we're walking away.
Let's watch this because we should win the next one.
Or whatever one. We need one. We need to see what this feeling is. And that's usually kind of the cliche answer you get from coaches on that stuff. But also,
he does have a great history with it.
I think it's lame and it's weak if you run to the locker room after you lose. That is weak. Like, and I applaud the Red Bulls. And good Lord, it looked very painful for standing out there, watching it, absorbing it, being a part of what was a – you know, was pretty evenly matched 90 minutes. And in a different universe, they win that game because the breaks go their way. The mistakes aren't made by them. That wasn't the case.
Daniel Royer doesn't get hurt a month and a half ago.
Right.
Yeah, that was the big thing, right?
Well, but to that point, I think depth was a reason that KC won this game. I thought Jimmy Majanda came off the bench and was better than Jurso. And Daniel Shallowy, not just the goal.
Yeah.
When he came on,
the first thing he did was roast the Red Bulls defense.
He was every bit as attacking as Latif Blessing was and as involved. So you look at New York, and the whole time, you could bring Mohamed Cade off the bench. The guy's played one game ever.
Yeah.
You could bring Etienne Jr. off the bench, who's arguably the best player on the continent. But they just didn't have an option where you were like, this is – and Gonzalo Verón. But they don't have – they didn't have a lot of options, and when guys got hurt, they have to move things around, and no one's playing a natural position.
I was hoping Etienne would start because I thought he was good over the weekend, and I think he seems so close to just like getting that last little bit down and being a difference maker. And I was disappointed he wasn't out there.
That last little bit is still missing for him right now.
Yeah,
as it's, it is for a lot of young players.
I know. Yeah, I know. I'm not
against you.
Well, yeah, okay. Stop fighting.
Yeah.
In very gentle tones. In gentle
Kansas
tones.
Kansas City, Missouri, we're Extra Time Radio.
Here we are in Kansas City, the Brown Liquor Special. The flip side of it is, like, if we're saying that the Red Bulls got unlucky in parts and their finishing deserted them, Gerso was bad in his time on the field. He squandered a number of opportunities. Ryan Muir had a nice save on that. One of the breakaways that Tyler Adams just on his horse got back and made him cut across to a bad angle, Gerso. What did we make of the Ryan Mira, Luis Robles decision by Jesse Marsh? Because Dave and I did not get a chance to talk about this. We taped on Sunday. Jesse Marsh announced his decision later. I respect the decision, for a lot of different reasons.
I don't think it mattered.
Oof, the second one mattered.
I don't think it mattered.
Literally on the
game. He got left out to roast by his back line.
I understand.
And like, it was a tap-in.
Like I said to Weeby during the live show, there's very few goals that happen in soccer where it's only one person's fault, and that was not one of them. But I think Robles does better on that.
Even if he does, then they lose that game 1-0. In case he sees it, I don't think that was the reason. He definitely wasn't at fault.
Dan Stelly is shaking his head at you. He is shaking his head no.
No, he's shaking his head at Toronto FC giving up 18 goals.
Yeah, he's literally watching Atlanta highlights right here. Yeah, I mean, that's a good reason to shake your head. We'll talk about LA in just a second because don't go to Mercedes-Benz Stadium on a weeknight if you're an MLS club. Like, just cancel the trip.
If you go, just bring 10. Don't play 11 because there's no reason to.
You're not going to have 11
just
on the
field. Just, like, bow to mercy before it hits you.
I agree. I don't think that this is on Ryan Mira. You know, back post sleepy time for Murillo. And you let Latif Blessing, who, when I interviewed him on the field, like, is coming up.
You guys danced together, bro.
We did dance. I needed to dance with Latif Blessing.
It was beautiful.
I thought I did respectably.
I will say this. You do not present as a person who can dance, but then when you actually start dancing, you can move it a little bit.
That was a brief
little
taste.
There are three hosts on this Extra Time Radio podcast, and two of them, Doyle has told in the last few months, they are surprisingly light on their feet.
That's fair. But Latif comes up to like a little bit higher than my waist. Like he's a small man.
Tiny dude.
You can't let him get
he's only
free.
19.
Completely unmarked. He's such a talent. The thing about Latif and this, it's the inconsistency game to game, but it's also he has a lot of injuries that it seems like a lot of games he's forced to come off or he's going down quickly. He's not getting calls anymore because the referees look at him and say, you're trying to buy this one. But he was unplayable in the first 30 minutes. He comes off. It's okay. He got his goal. He's happy about it. Shallowy gets his goal. Happy about that as well. Sporting Kansas City lift the cup. I mean, it's a great night for them.
Let's also give a head nod to Peter Vermees, who traded Dom Dwyer and then won U.S. Open Cup. Knows what he's doing right now. And
Diego Rubio wasn't like a super – he wasn't danger man necessarily.
He got
game.
Into Felipe's head within like 15 seconds.
Because he kicked him. He got lucky here. Video review might take him off the field.
Well, he knew there was no video review, and he got in Felipe's head. And I think he'd mess with Felipe for at least the first hour.
Agreed. Felipe's like, wait.
This is what I do.
That's me. Like, yeah. I'm supposed to kick you and then like pretend like nothing happened.
Yep.
He is – from a hold-up perspective, I think he does a good job to gather the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think he, and as Sporting KC fans would probably agree, is frustrating at times because he's like 50-50. 50% of the time, you're like, wow, great vision. 50% of the time, he's sitting on a ball while somebody streaks down the sideline throwing their heads up.
And he's another one who had a chance in the box in the second half where he took an extra touch. It was bizarre.
Yeah, it was bizarre. The Gerso one in the first half was more bizarre, where he passed up an open shot.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rubio's was as well. But he's very good when he turns at beating the first defender. Mm-hmm. He has clean feet. He can get out of his feet quickly. He has the ability to like do something special to beat someone, which Dom doesn't always do. Dom will turn and beat you for speed and use his body to get in between you. So it's a little bit different, but I think it's still useful. And
It went to the same diving school as Dom, which helps.
But you look at the team that KC put out there on the field today, and I don't know who's the best in the Western Conference. I mean, I think we pound that one down with the Vancouver Whitecaps on Sunday.
What up, Whitecaps fans?
But there's I don't think KC is the favorite, but I also don't think there's any reason that if this team's healthy that they can't win the Western Conference.
They have like a tried and true go to, we are this, you can't stop us in this sense, which is you're not going to score goals on us, especially at home.
Right.
So, like, they have something that they can lean on and say, this is our identity. We can rely on Matt Beisler and Ikel Parra to shut things down. Ilya will be a guy who can be an outlet for
Let me ask you this. Does all of this matter if, yet again, they end up going on the road to Cascadia in a knockout round?
Well, Vermes said after the game to me, and you could tell there was a point of emphasis of, we need to be a top two, if not top four seed. He said, we know we're good at home. We know what we're good at. Yeah. We think we're very good in the two-legged series.
Yeah,
so he understands what's gone wrong the past few years in those games. Mm-hmm. And I think he knows if he could get – I think if he thinks if he had either of those two games at home, Seattle last year, Portland 2 years ago, I think he thinks they're going into the Western Conference semifinals.
And in a two-game set, they just go on the road and say –
yeah, well,
good luck.
We're going to close up shop.
Yeah.
Good luck getting one.
And if Failhaber plays the way he did last year in the playoffs, you have a shot on the road. I mean, if you can hold at home
and
like
they're
you
better
expect
this
to.
Year, they're better equipped this year with Latif, with Jurso, despite this being a stink bomb for him. He scored some great goals for him. Yeah, look, I think they've got an opportunity. Everybody in the West has an opportunity. Mm-hmm. The Red Bulls right now are sitting in sixth in the Eastern Conference. They go to Crew SC this weekend.
Huge one.
Fresh off of a really, really, really painful loss.
Get a point. That's a victory for the Red Bulls.
With games in hand.
Ultimately, how
Columbus.
Will this loss affect this team, this club, Jesse Marsh? I mean, this really is a gut punch for them. I think they're the last MLS original to not have a cup. They have a shield. They don't have a cup.
Yeah,
I think
have two shields, right?
The last of the 10, I believe, to not have a cup. I think.
Does Colorado has it? Well, 2010.
The MLS Cup.
Yeah, right. Oof, that was not a great game.
Don't you dare talk about Connor Casey.
Yeah, right. Hey, you know, I'm a big Connor Casey fan. They have to regroup quick because they're not safe yet, especially after what Montreal did tonight. They have to regroup quick. They have to go out and get points, and they cannot let this slip. To borrow a Gerardism, this team is too talented to miss out on the playoffs.
I agree with that statement, but in terms of talent, I don't know where this team sits in the Eastern Conference, and I don't know what this year is because I think over the last 3 years, you've started the year each year since they won the Shield with what you have to win in the playoffs, prove you can win in the playoffs, and a game like this to me, which is similar game plan to a postseason game, shows that they haven't changed the things that they struggle with, which is when a team sits back compact, outside of Sasha Kljestan, who has an idea of how to break that team down?
Yeah, I don't disagree. And that's where, like, the press is supposed to be the best playmaker.
But teams will cede possession and play long ball in
playoffs.
Sporting
did that. They did that this game. Every time they got in trouble back there, hoof. And they don't care. They're like, okay, have the ball.
Right.
Not doing anything.
I get what you're saying, but like Red Bull had their chances, man. If BWP has his normal game, this is 1-1 at halftime. And then that's – I don't want to throw anybody under the bus here, but like – if your best players aren't your best players, you're not going to win. Bradley Wright, Phillips, Sasha Kljestan, Felipe are supposed to be the best players on this team, and they were not.
Okay, so
it was
Felipe,
Tyler Adams and Aaron Long.
But is Felipe a good enough player to be the third best player on your team and you're going to win MLS Cup?
So far, no.
Because Ozzie Alonso was the third best player arguably on Seattle last year. Well, Roman Torres, the way he played in – the play. Okay,
but
there
it is.
Talking
but, about?
But well, Clint Dempsey was out.
But then you can debate that. There's a number of guys you can say, but he might have been.
Right.
Oh, what about him?
And Portland 3 years ago had pick your numbers and names.
Anyway, the best players for the Red Bulls tonight were Tyler Adams and Aaron Long. And those guys are real good. I think Aaron Long is actually really underrated. But, like, if those are your best players, you're not going to win.
Yeah, and they didn't win. 2-1, Sporting Kansas City, U.S. Open Cup champions, their third U.S. Open Cup title in six seasons. They now have four overall. That is matching the Chicago Fire, and I'm blanking right now.
D.C. United, maybe?
Yeah, that's what I think it is. The other two teams have four Open
Seattle.
Cup titles. And Seattle. Yeah. No, so I think it's the Fire in Seattle.
Yeah.
No, either way, they're tied. It doesn't matter. Five for Bethlehem Steel, five for Maccabi LA.
Isn't it Maccabee?
Maccabee? I don't know. Talk
no,
to Maccabee's
this guy. Right.
Ooh.
That's not pew, what my pew. Wife says. She says wow. Maccabee.
Your wife's not a fan of Maccabi Los Angeles.
She's an Ashkenazi Jew from Southern California. She doesn't cotton to your New York ways.
Clearly not.
I don't cotton to any of your ways, and I'm going to the break right now. We'll come back and talk Atlanta, Montreal, Toronto, everything you want to hear about. Coming up next.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I thought I was ready, ready for someone else. Every time I get
back at extratime radio, driven by Continental. I am Andrew Reby. With me, David Goss and Matt Doyle. We're hanging out in Kansas City. It's 2 a.m. The yawns have started, but good Lord, we have more soccer talk to run over here because there were some bizarre results. Well, time out. There was a bizarre result on Wednesday night. That was Montreal winning 5-3 in Toronto. And then there was a garden variety MLS result, which was Atlanta United absolutely smoking the LA Galaxy 4-0. At home. So that happened. Where do we want to start, guys? Which one do you think is more interesting? Which one gets your blood pumping more?
I think Montreal winning 5-3 at, like, look, Toronto has.
No Jovinko or Josie, by the way.
Or Vasquez.
Yeah. That's
Toronto has the shield wrapped up. They, even with this loss, they're going to win the Supporters' Shield. They're going to set probably a couple other records. It's still a rivalry game. Still means a lot to those fans on both sides, red and blue. This is still a pretty significant result.
And it was 5-1. 5-3 is what the final is there. But like the last two were the garbage time, Toussaint Ricketts hitting his bonus numbers goals. Good for him, by the way. Two goals. He's been banging them in recently.
That game just makes me angry.
Why?
Because I thought Montreal was.
Wow, because you hate Montreal?
I thought they were a team that could contend legitimately for the Eastern Conference in the playoffs. And for MLS Cup, and then
They're not done yet.
They laid an egg for a month, and then they show up and do things like this, and you're like, "Yeah, thank you. Right. I've been on board the whole time. You guys just showed up." So it annoys me.
It is.
I guess it does get
probably
more
annoying for Impact fans, given that you have no rooting interest here, and this is all just kind of
it's
like,
on me. This is all me.
Yeah, wishy-washy soccer neutral fandom.
They're only 3 points back. Are we sure they're done?
Yeah, 3 points back of the Red Bulls. Red Bulls on 42, 28 games played. Impact on 29, 39 games played.
You got the point.
39 games. Yeah.
29 games played, 39 points.
It is late.
it is very late.
As I said, the yawns, the fatigue, it's
those
all
those numbers brought to you by Glenn Fittick.
Who should should Red Bulls fans be worried? I mean, they're sad.
A little bit.
They're sad on this Thursday, Wednesday night, whatever you want to call it. Should they be worried that they might not make the playoffs? They go to Crew SC this weekend.
Right.
Not an easy game. Crew SC are rolling.
And then what is it?
I'll put it out there that no, the Red Bulls should not be worried.
Really?
Yeah.
Not at all.
Why is that?
Yeah. Well, in games in hand alone.
Because
they
are you
pass
saying because
they have
Columbus.
One? They have one.
They're 2 points behind.
If they get a result in Columbus, then maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if they don't, they're still 2 points behind. I guess at that point they wouldn't be two.
So they would be five.
Red Bulls are no wins in the last five in the league. Obviously, they lost the Open Cup here.
They're a different team without Royer
at Columbus.
Versus DC is very close, by the way.
First DC,
he was limping. Weeby and I saw him limp around the field for 15 minutes after the game.
The fact that in a final he wasn't there was not even a. They didn't even get on the field.
They knew that like a week or two ago, though, that he wasn't going.
Because he's still limping.
Right.
He doesn't look even close.
Well, I think he is close. But at the same time, I still think this is a Red Bulls team that in the regular season has gotten it done in the
David
past.
David has like and a, this like season. A telepathic connection with Daniel Royer, and he
yeah.
knows.
The thing about close,
they both play at a Red Bull Salzburg.
The thing about close is it's not there, and they have very limited time in which to get this flipped. So it's at Columbus versus DC. So if you're going through this, you're saying at Columbus probably loss, draw if you get a good result and bounce back. Versus DC, got to win that one at home. At TFC,
that's an L.
And then you are hosting Vancouver, which is good. You don't go to Vancouver. That could be really painful because of just the travel. Versus Atlanta, so you're home to Atlanta. That's not a bad one there. And then at DC. So they have winnable games in there.
Sounds like the Red Bulls are going to make the playoffs.
Is that a guarantee?
You can go take your guarantees.
Oh,
this
wouldn't
be my, hey, you're the one out here throwing
Get out
things.
Of my
why are you so that. Against Long Island?
Hey, I'm just saying. Red Bulls fans, hit us up, 401-206-0 MLS.
I'm
are
sure they
worried?
Will.
They're definitely worried. I see them on Twitter. Tonight was a tough one.
They are a miserable fan base on social media. They are a miserable
fan
base. It
comes with the territory in some ways. Like, they've had some great moments here, but it just always feels like the shoe's about to fall.
Okay, we have already trashed on the Red Bulls,
I feel like
enough on this podcast.
Let's talk.
We're going to talk other MLS now.
Let's talk Atlanta.
See, there you go.
Yeah, 4-0. Mm-hmm. Yamil Assad takes his turn.
Miserable fan base in a different way.
Ooh, actually, bring that take to our shores here. What in what way?
No, I mean
the like new Seattle way, where they're just like,
exactly that.
Yeah.
Though they're not as much as Seattle was in 2009, 2010.
Well, we're just months into this. We're not even a year into this.
Seattle were. They came into the league at 11. Atlanta is at least, 8.5, 9. So it's a little bit different.
Okay, well, they got another game to, hang their hat on. 4-0 LA Galaxy, who seem to get whooped by a lot of people these days. It's been a very tough season for them.
Montreal's next game at Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't sound like a W.
Blair-em Jamiley.
Yeah. I don't know that that's going to matter.
Well, I mean, Blair and Jamiley versus Jeff Lorenowitz is the matchup that
everyone's tuning in for.
Yeah, but what about like Laurent Simon against Joseph Martinez and their outside backs against the shredder that is Vialba and then Assad?
Isn't Laurent Simon supposed to be able to organize a defense exactly like to counteract what Atlanta's doing? He's a Belgian World Cup veteran.
Yeah, I don't know that your experience changes Victor Cabrera's skill level and Hussein Kamara's skill level.
Why is he roasting Victor Cabrera?
I'm just doing what MLS attackers
This is
do.
What he's got to do to justify in his mind that the Red Bulls
God.
Are – oh, wow.
Wow, David.
This is quite a show going here. What I found interesting about this game is that it's kind of like the baton gets passed around with this team.
Yeah.
Who's going to look unstoppable on any given day? And generally, recently, they all do, and that – is very similar to this game as well. Vialba sets up Assad. Joseph Martinez gets the first goal. He's going after the golden boot still. Almi Roan has the nice little chip, but this was Assad's turn to say, like, you three have gotten, in particular Joseph and Almi Roan, you've gotten so much publicity, and everybody just sits around and talks about what game changers you are and, what will happen to you and can you win the golden boot? Are you an MVP despite playing in 15 games? Almi Roan, what European team should be after you? Meanwhile, Assad, I don't think Assad's got the love that he deserves. His assist numbers are bueno.
Amongst the league leaders, yeah.
And I think he provides a really good counteracting balance to the Vialba kind of pace and dynamic play on the right side. He is more of a possession guy.
Yep.
He's able to hold on to it. He's strong. He's tough. He puts in a lot of effort on defense that I didn't see that effort until I went to Atlanta and watched a game on the sideline.
That's because all you do is look at the stats.
Oh, man, all the time. Just in that box score, just delicious possession numbers, passes completed.
I don't think you'd watch an Atlanta game until you went last week.
No, you're right. You're completely right about all of that. That's factual. But then I saw Assad recover on defense and be physical and have a toughness that I kind of thought he wouldn't have.
He's got that Lebanese toughness, my Lebanese brother.
But now,
Terrell's out here getting everything.
How
he
do
can.
You? Okay, so how do you stop Atlanta right now? What you're coming in? You're Montreal.
You don't turn the ball over stupidly.
Yeah.
Like I don't mean to be flippant here because Atlanta's done some really great stuff and they have really great players, but they feast off of stupid turnovers.
Especially those ones into the feet of your defensive midfielder that Almiron jumps on,
yeah,
takes off you, and then sprints away.
Like, watch some freaking film.
Yeah.
And, like, even if you watch film, they're still good enough to beat you, but not beat you like a drum, like what they've done the last three or four times out. You got to be – like, it's – there's nothing fancy about it. They're just
– And 90 minutes changes everything, but – with Jonathan Spector on the field, Orlando was beating Atlanta.
Yeah.
So there is a way, and the way is you play direct and you dominate their back line physically. You take advantage of their fullbacks' lapses defensively with quality crossing, and then you stay organized behind them when they're on the ball, and you drop deep and you make them create in that zone 14 area right around the box.
They actually are, like, among the lowest in the league in terms of takeouts and, you know, successful dribbles.
Yeah, it all happens in open space.
It all happens in open space off of stupid turnovers. You cannot play sloppy like that. And it's I love the fact that Atlanta has, like, Tata Martino said, okay, this is how we're going to kill you. Because, like, you in MLS for too often, you've had too many teams that feel like they can take plays, games, weeks, months off. Atlanta does not let you get away with that.
17 goals in the last four.
They will go and kill you. And I love it. I love it. It's changed the way teams have to approach games. And I hope that everybody catches up because it'll make the league better.
So this occurs to me that we have not yet talked about the Jay Heaps dismissal on this show. And as you talk about Atlanta United destroying teams and ripping teams apart, you know, that 7-0 loss that the Revs suffered jumps to mind, and Jay Heaps is no longer the head coach of the Revolution. Tommy Soane has moved in right now into his place as an interim.
I assume we're going to edit, like, the Fall Guy theme under this because, like, Jay Heaps is the Fall Guy for some
sure.
institutional failures for the Revs.
Yeah, look, ultimately, that's – somebody had to go.
Yep.
You're not going to make the playoffs. You have a talented roster that probably should at least be contending or challenging people or progressing in some way, and it hasn't really happened. But there's a lot of mismatched parts on this team, especially in the attacking side and on the defensive side. They just ignored their issues at center back for too long. And then I don't know if it's not knowing the background, I can't call these TAM signings quote-unquote panic buys. But they have not performed to a level in which they needed to perform to have this team be a respectable team. So there's a lot going on here for the Revs. It appears Mike Burns will stick around. Mm-hmm. He's got to make better signings, got to have a more cohesive roster. The signing of Christian Namath doesn't exactly feel that way all the time. And I can't imagine.
Does it feel like an elbow to the jaw?
Graham Zusi might tell you it does. Kai Kamara, his future is up in the air.
I think that entire attacking quartet, sextet, seventet, whatever it is, however many pieces are in that attack, I think all their futures are up in the air. I'd say, except if I was the Revolution, maybe Diego Fagundes because he's the homegrown guy, and Juan Agudelo. Those two are your young pieces that you can build around because they can fit in with other pieces. But I'm looking at this
Kellen
league.
Kellen Rowe, you're not including in that group?
I don't know that I would include him in that group. He's versatile. He plays all over the place. But Lee Wynn, Kai.
They have had some obscene trade offers for Kelvin Rowe over the years.
Well, there you go. Maybe he's in that conversation. Lee Wynn, though, Christian Nemeth as well, Kai Kamara, all those guys to me are guys that have to be available, whether in the league or outside the league, to find a way to change your team. Because when you talk about that modge podge of pieces, you nailed it. And then you look at what you have in KC. With a core that makes sense and that you know that you can fill in gaps around it because that part of it's always going to show up. And New England's the opposite, which is this is our core and we have no idea what we're going to get from them game after game and we don't know how they fit together. And that's not a way to build a successful team. When it works, like in 2014, you go to an MLS Cup, which is fantastic, but they haven't been able to make it work for more than 3 weeks.
Was 2014, was that a mirage? Because you're talking about Jermaine Jones rolling in, you're talking about MV Lee in that form that Lee Wynn, who I love his game. That was production that wasn't going to be replicable.
I mean, he's had a better year this year just based on the numbers. In terms of goals and assists, he had 23 in 2014. He's already at 24 this year, I think.
That snuck under my radar.
Yeah, there you go.
told you, I'm not even looking at the stats. See?
So you're just totally zoomed.
Bobby Shuttleworth was out of his mind the last 2 or 3 months of 2014. And I think that was a big part of it. Obviously, Jermaine Jones being fit and healthy and available and giving 1,000% every time he played for the Revs in 2014 definitely helped, and he's never been that player since. They've also been really, really unlucky this year. So there's a bunch of stuff happening.
But they said the same thing last year. They were really unlucky last year.
They were unlucky in terms of injuries. This year, they're unlucky in terms of, like, if you look at their expected goals,
yeah,
they should be a much
but
better
that's
team.
Like the Revs conversation.
Exactly.
And
that's what I wrote. Like, saying we should be better is not a great rallying cry. Yeah. I don't think they should break this team up entirely, but I do understand why they made the move.
Those TM center backs going to have to be better.
Oh, yeah.
Because you made those signings, you put money on the line, you invested a finite resource in this league, and I presume sign them to contracts that don't allow you to just say deuces. So they have to be better. That ultimately, that foundation of this team, the attack can be great, but if you're just shipping goals all the time and you don't have any faith in the guys behind you, this is what happens. 51 goals allowed this year. That's the most in the Eastern Conference.
Where do you look for a coach? Do you look from within MLS? Do you look maybe
this is a great question.
NASL, There's USL, college?
Someone put up a list of names that have, like, Revs connections.
Gio Savarese.
Right.
Savarese seems to – he seems to be the one to me for a lot of reasons.
He succeeded at NASL with the biggest budget. He's not going to have the biggest budget in New England.
No, definitely not. Yeah, but I don't see New England going out and, like, breaking the bank on a coach. But the thing about coaching in MLS that we're starting to see with the Vieiras of the world, with the Tata Martinez of the world, is, like, the salary cap doesn't cover coaching. So if you think you can gain an advantage from it, you don't have any limitations on what you can spend. So then it comes down to what are you willing to spend.
Well, and also, yeah.
Who can you attract? Certainly who you can attract. But what you're willing to spend, is that really relates
to Those two things.
Both on the salary side for a coach, but also on the DP TAM.
I just made a hand gesture, yes, which is really good for a podcast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Ralston, that's an option. Pat Noonan, assistant with the U.S. national team, right?
Yeah. Are you really going to go with another coach who has no head coaching experience?
I don't know that there's a lot of options that have head coaching experience. Dominic Kinnear is one of them.
When you say that there's not a lot of options that don't have head coaching experience, are you saying
– do.
Sorry, I meant to say that. Yeah. My bad. Are you saying that in the general pool of applicants for any team in MLS, or are you saying for the Revs?
No, I'm saying for MLS teams.
What about John Molinay?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a guy who's never coached in Major League Soccer, though.
Don't have to have coached in Major League Soccer.
Oh, you're just saying head coaching experience at all.
Yeah.
But I just think a lot of guys, it seems like, who get fired from head coaching jobs in Major League Soccer haven't stuck around over the last few years. So you look at, you know, normally in a sports league, then they recycle themselves. Robin Fraser gets mentioned all the time because he's one of the guys who went back to being an assistant and is still relevant in the league.
I think he's pretty widely regarded as the best
assistant
in the league, right?
Right, I think so. But I think he's well compensated, and he's in a situation with Greg Vanney and Toronto FC where, well, it's a pretty good situation. Let's look at the weekend real quick. There's a lot of games that are starting to matter more and more as the weeks go on because teams are losing all their ability to have a mistake not hurt them. So you look at, like, you know, New England's going to host Toronto FC. Don't care, honestly, at this point. Toronto's chasing history. Straight up throwing it out there. But NYCFC Houston, that's a big game. NYCFC fading a little bit. Chicago Fire starting to nip at their heels.
Well, they'll have the boost of hosting it in Hartford. It's an emotional boost.
NYCFC, now you're cheering for Connecticut.
Are they your hometown team now?
Kinda.
A little bit.
Matt Doyle is officially
NYCFC.
Honest to
God, if they play Brass Bonanza at that game, I am in.
Do you have a Hartford Whalers jersey?
Are you kidding?
You do.
Oh, I have like three.
Yeah, I knew that's where I was going. Houston is going to NYCFC, and by that we mean Connecticut, and Dallas is going to Minnesota.
Must-win game.
Dallas and Minnesota's must-win, no?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
San Jose in D.C., probably also a must-win. Less so, but certainly
RSL home to Seattle is.
San Jose still have three home games left, so I'm not sure at D.C. is – like, it's a – you should get a result.
It would certainly change their fate in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. RSL home to Seattle is a must-win game, and that's probably, I think, the best game of the weekend. So that's the one I'm looking for.
But people on Twitter are saying that you're
You have not seen Seattle play lately.
No, but I have seen RSL play lately.
Yeah, RSL's fun. Seattle's not.
No. Yeah, Seattle might choke the life out of this one. Portland host Orlando, Atlanta, Montreal, Sporting KC, LA Galaxy, Vancouver, Colorado. Good slate of games. We'll be back at 7 p.m. Eastern on Sunday Night Extra Time Live, driven by Continental. Dave Goss and I going through the whole weekend. Don't roll your eyes at me. We're going to break right now, all right? We'll be right back with the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Radio driven by Continental, hanging out in Kansas City after the U.S. Open Cup final. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, David Goss and Matt, the armchair analyst. Doyle, we are on Sirius XMFC, Channel 85 at MLSsoccer.com. Hit that subscribe button on iTunes. Hook us up with a review, a positive one.
Maybe not after tonight.
I know. Dave just gave his review. He said this is the worst podcast he's ever been a part of. Which is harsh. So if you disagree, 401-206-0-MLS. That's the Hot Take Hotline. What do we have in there, Dave, before we get out of here?
I know you guys try not to criticize Mexican players, but Giovanni Dos Santos is a useless blank.
Who said that? You or somebody?
No, that was a text message. I don't have a name.
Oh, okay.
It's
caller unknown.
What? This is a conundrum for the Galaxy.
Because
they went all in on the Dos Santos's.
They don't like the Hot Take Hotliner's tone. they did. They have to make it work. And the problem, like, obviously Gio has underperformed. Obviously, just about everybody except Roman Alessandrini has underperformed. And when you have that many people falling short of the mark, it suggests that there's something systemic. So I think... I mean, look, people, it's a business. People are going to be up against it this winter. It's clearly not just Kurt Arnolfo's fault, and now it's not just Siggy Schmidt's fault, and we'll see what happens.
In the meantime, there are going to be some lumps. There have been some lumps. There will continue to be lumps for the LA Galaxy, I expect. What else we got?
Speaking of coaches, who would you pick to coach your MLS team and why? A, Jay Heaps, B, Pablo Mascherini, or C, Ben Olsen. I don't know how Ben Olsen ended up in this group, but maybe we could add Jeff Cassar in there as well.
Human Spirit FC, is that what this is?
Yeah, no?
Which one would you pick for your team?
For my
your hypothetical team.
I think I would pick Jay Heaps.
Yeah,
I think so. I think that my team, I want it to be young, I want it to be domestic, and I think Jay Heaps had a moment with that. It didn't progress the way that you want it to progress, but
I will say this: it progressed for 3 years,
right?
Which
right.
Like,
it hit that point where you're like, "Oh my God, this is going to be this special
and
MLS
he couldn't
team."
Get it over, right, yeah. Right. But like in most parts of the world, 3 years is a pretty good run for a coach, and to build something that gets consistently better for that time. I like a lot of what Jay Heaps did. I think that. They were able to play good soccer and keep the ball and do some good stuff. And they didn't get a trophy, but they came damn close twice.
I'm going to Heaps. Who are you going with? Yeah, we got one there.
I'll go Ben Olsen.
Okay.
Yeah, getting more out of less, I think, a lot of times. And great and cohesive units.
So you're saying your team's going to have not very much talent?
Well, you never know.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not big on talent.
Okay.
Joe in South Carolina request, as we move towards the MVP discussion, can you do a review of historical biggest snubs in MLS MVP history?
We can, but my brain is broken right now.
D-Row 2005. Which is like, I just kind of went at Taylor Twellman right there because Taylor won it in 2005. But like D-Row is really good that year. Brad Davis, 2011, I think, maybe had a shout. Like D-Row won it in 2011, but DC didn't make it. So
right, that was a weird year for the MVP too.
Yeah, very.
And that was
weird.
A weird year for D-Row too. That was all together a strange year. Yeah, look, I'm too tired to even contemplate this.
Wow,
right now.
Way to give it your all.
By the way, last year.
You're doing a Kamar Lawrence.
By the
right
way, last
here.
Year.
I am. Take me off, man. Get me off the field right now.
Javinko last year with David Villa. Javinko had a shot.
Then he got injured.
Yeah.
And being available is part of value.
You and your the skill of being healthy. Speaking of that, the Toronto Duck, Vasquez has been a more important player to Toronto than Javinko this season.
That's
Andrew,
arguable.
I think
I think that certainly you can make an argument that's pretty compelling in that sense. Now, all of them together may equal MLS Cup. So, look, we crowned a champion tonight. U.S. Open Cup goes to Sporting KC. Watch the week in action. Check us on ETL. We'll see you next week, everybody.